Your first question comes from the line of Rachel Gantz with Oil Price Information Service.
Hi, thank you for holding the call. I actually have sort of a related question. Without congressional action, the cellulosic ethanol tax credit is set to expire at the end of this year. Do you expect that to occur? And if so, what would be the immediate ramifications to that industry?
Well, it's unfortunate. Rachel, this is Bob. It's unfortunate that the legislative schedule being what it is in fact unlikely that an extender's package is going to get passed before January 1, allowing these important tax incentives to lapse. There was an effort on the Senate floor today to try to bring it up, but obviously it was unsuccessful. We are very hopeful that when Congress returns in January, they will move very quickly to put in place or to restore the tax incentives that are necessary. You know, just as the cellulosic industry is on the cusp of commercialization and poised for the first time to be able to take advantage of a production tax incentive, when these facilities were built with the expectation that those tax incentives would be there, to have the rug pulled out from underneath them right now is indeed quite unfortunate. And we'll be working hard with the Advanced Ethanol Council and others to make sure that the tax incentives are restored.
Do you expect them to be restored retroactively?
I would hope so, although honestly, you know, retroactive tax incentives, when it's a production tax incentive and you're trying to sell fuel, it's hard to do. That's why having these in place is so important, and why it's going to hurt particularly acutely if they're allowed to lapse.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Amanda Pacheco with GrainWire.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, Amanda.
Hi, Bob. Today you obviously highlighted the successes related to the RFS, but I don't think there's any question that 2013 has been a challenging year politically, legislatively, and now with the administration's proposal for next year. I know you began the year at the National Ethanol Conference with a sort of very strong message of don't mess with the RFS. Wondering if you would say that strategy has worked, and given the setbacks this year, do you have any plans to change your messaging or legislative strategies for the new year?
No, I mean, I think the strategy certainly had worked on Capitol Hill. I mean, there was not a meaningful effort to move legislation. The Energy and Commerce Committee was certainly looking at some of the issues that had been raised and was sort of talking about trying to address some of those, but there was not a meaningful legislative effort. We did not anticipate that the administration would do what it's done, but it's not over yet either, is it? I mean, it's a proposed rule, and I certainly hope and will be working hard to assure that the administration restores the integrity of the RFS program. I think that the proposal that they have out there to allow the RFS to be determined by the blend wall that the oil companies themselves created turns this program over to the oil companies. And that just makes no sense. One of the reasons I want to have this call today is to remind people what this bill was all about. We didn't pass the renewable fuel standard to be convenient for ExxonMobil. We passed the RFS to force oil companies to do the things that they otherwise would not do. And it has worked. And if you want to see the industry continue to grow, if you want the evolution of the industry to continue to second-generation facilities, to lower carbon fuels, you have got to restore the integrity of the RIN system. You have got to restore the RFS to as it was written by the Congress. And if you do that, the kind of benefits that you've seen for the past 6 years will continue for the next nine and beyond.
Hey, thanks. And just a follow-up, do you have any specific legislative goals for next year beyond just protecting the RFS?
Well, I mean, Rachel certainly had asked about the cellulosic tax incentive, and we do intend to work with the Congress on that. But with respect to the RFS, no. Our message remains the same. This program is successful. This program is working. That while there are detractors that for their own self-interest are suggesting that changes need to be made, we believe strongly that there is nothing wrong with the RFS that cannot be fixed with what is right with the RFS, that there is enough flexibility in the program to adjust cellulosic numbers if need be, as the agency has done, to assure greater transparency with RIN markets to avoid some of the issues that have occurred there. But you have got to allow the RIN markets to do their job, to drive innovation for biofuels production, to drive new market opportunities for biofuels, and to break the paradigm that currently exists where the oil companies control what goes into our gas tanks.
Great, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of David Schaefer with Star Tribune.
Hello, thanks for taking my question. It's this. How many of the 209 U.S. ethanol plants remain closed, and how has that been trending lately? And do you see more being closed in 2014 if the EPA goes ahead with its proposed changes to the RFS blending level for corn ethanol?
Jeff, you want to take the first half, and
sure,
I'll add
sure.
if necessary?
Yeah, I mean, David, we've seen, you know, a number of the facilities that were closed early in the year come back online. I think earlier this year we had something like 25 facilities sitting idle. Today that number would be closer to 10 or 12. So, you know, we've seen facilities come back online, particularly in the fall when the new corn crop began coming into the system and corn prices began to fall. And as a result of that, we've seen production increase substantially in recent weeks. The industry has been running at an annualized rate of about 14.2 to 14.4 billion gallons, which is up, you know, substantially from the 12.8 or 13 billion gallon annualized rate that we saw early in the year. Now, I would expect because corn prices have come down and because of the spread between ethanol and gasoline right now, demand is extremely strong. Profitability is good in the industry. Stocks are at a low lower than normal rate. So I would expect production to continue pretty strong as the new year begins. We expect exports to begin to pick up, and really the magnitude of growth in exports is going to depend, I think, a lot on what EPA ends up doing with the RFS volumes for 2014.
David, I'd just add that in terms of looking down the road in the future and what the impact might be, EPA's rulemaking or proposed rulemaking is a status quo rule. It says there will be no growth because they pegged it to what is already able to be sold. So because of the economics in the industry today, you do see many of the 25 plants that had been shut down coming back online, and I would expect that to continue. The danger is that the growth in the industry stops. The danger is the signal that it sends to the investment community that are looking now to commercialize second-generation technologies, to invest in cellulosic ethanol and other advanced biofuels. It will not happen if this rule is finalized. That's the danger. And we just don't want to see the future growth and the future evolution of biofuels to stop, because that's what the oil companies want.
Your Your next question comes from the line of John Siciliano with APA.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, John.
Inside EPA. But
I was wondering if you would change jobs.
Yeah, not EPA. Anyway, for publication. Just make that clear. I was just wondering if you had any follow-up from a variety of congressional lawmakers from Senate and House, meeting with Gina McCarthy yesterday, Senator Grassley, Senator Durbin, I guess it was mainly the Senate, and Heidi Heitkamp, as well as there was a letter to Gina in the White House, as well as USDA, on the biodiesel number. So there was a variety of activity. I was wondering if you're hearing anything from Grassley's office or Durbin.
You know, my most trusted source for information on those meetings would be from inside EPA.
Okay.
Maybe look, we know what you know. The meetings are occurring. And we think that that's a good sign. I'm not certain that the White House fully appreciated what EPA, the impacts of what EPA was proposing. As I've said before, I think the White House still supports biofuels. I think the White House still supports the RFS. I think that there was an overreaction at the agency to higher RIN prices. But the White House has got to understand that you can either have a growing biofuels industry or you can have low RIN prices. You're not going to have both. And I think what members of Congress are suggesting is, you know, wait a minute. Let's back up here. We understand that EPA was trying to be responsive to some of the concerns being raised by the oil companies. But clearly they've gone too far, because we are not going to allow the RFS to be undermined to this degree. So I think it's all good. We're going to continue to work with our friends in the Congress. We're going to continue to work with EPA, the White House, to educate people about what this program has done. Remind them why it was so successful. And get the facts out there.
Grassley is obviously supportive of the RFS. Is there any new legislative push on, you know, from the defenders of the RFS, or is that something are they sticking to what your strategy is, do not open?
Yeah. We don't need new legislation.
Yeah,
we got our legislation. It was signed into a law on December 19th, 2007. We want to make sure that EPA and the administration remember the importance of that and stay true to the intent that was so evident on December 19th, 2007.
And Bob, just one last thing. I was just wondering if you had any new discussions with the administration, either with the Air Office, with the administrator, Gina McCarthy, or with Chris Grenler, or the White House?
We talk to EPA all the time. I'm not certain they're on my Christmas card list this year, but, we're going to continue to talk to them, and, we've given them data about the impact of RINs on gas prices. There has been none. We've given them data on ethanol infrastructure, FFVs, what increased E15 and E85 could do, that there's just no reason to be scared by the blend wall, and try to correct a lot of the fear-mongering and misinformation that the oil companies have been promulgating about this program.
Is there any? Have you heard anything about the Iowa delegation getting what they want, which is a meeting in Iowa, sit down with EPA, another hearing?
I don't know if there's been any response yet. I think it's pretty telling when members of both sides of the aisle, both houses of Congress, and the governor are telling EPA, you got to come to the state. You got to hear from the people here. I actually think that would be a pretty good idea. I think that EPA, again, perhaps doesn't realize just what they've done with this proposal. And getting out there and hearing from folks is important. I give EPA, and I'll actually say it specifically, Chris Grundler, in the Office of Air and Radiation, great credit for sitting through 13 hours of testimony at a hearing here in Arlington 2 weeks ago. And he was attentive, as was the other EPA staff. You know, more than two-thirds of the people that presented to EPA that day were strongly in support of the RFS. So I know that, you know, they're getting the messages, but quite frankly, getting outside the Beltway, getting away from some of the highly paid oil company lobbyists that were also there that day would probably be a good idea. But I don't know if they will, and I don't know if there's been a response to them yet.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Chris Anderson with the Illinois Farm Bureau.
Hi, Bob. I understand you just said that EPA is getting our messages, both from the industry, biofuels industry, and farmers who are in opposition to the EPA proposal. So can you clarify more about what the status of those is? I mean, do you think the response is good? Do we need more? Where are we at with the response in opposition to the EPA proposal?
Thanks, Chris. The comment period doesn't close until January 28th. And I think it's important for not just farmers, but consumers, for people that are concerned about energy security, for people that are interested in growing biofuels across this country, people that want to address global climate change, to let EPA know why the RFS needs to be maintained and why rolling back the RFS will have a negative impact on farm income, on our efforts to address climate change, on our effort to reduce our dependence on imported oil. For consumers, you roll back the RFS, you're going to see increased gasoline prices. None of this makes sense, but it is incumbent upon everybody to let EPA know. Yeah, they're hearing the message. Yeah, they're getting the arguments, but I think it needs to be echoed. I think it needs to be magnified. And I would implore folks across this country that care about what was so celebrated on December 19th to remind EPA of those things and to maintain the RFS as it was intended to be.
And a follow-up question. I know early on when the proposal came out, there was discussion about, well, if the proposal is finalized, you know, someone will sue. Is there any more thought about the biofuels industry suing if the EPA proposal does become finalized?
You know, I don't like to get the cart before the horse, and my focus right now is on getting facts before EPA that will convince them that the proposal didn't make sense, and returning the integrity of the RFS, making sure that the RIN markets are able to do what they were intended to do. And I'm not trying to dodge the question, Chris, because I think I've been pretty clear in the past. We are going to defend this program, you know, in every avenue we can. But I think, you know, talking about lawsuits right now detracts from what my mission is, and that is to convince EPA to make some changes now so that we don't have to get there. You know, we don't relish lawsuits. That's what API does. API right now has got about a dozen lawsuits on this program. You know, hopefully EPA will modify its proposal, get back to a program that we once had, allow the RIN system to drive innovation in the renewable fuel space, and we don't have to go down that road.
Very good. Thank you.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Bobby Lucas with Carr Clinic Network.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First, I'd like to congratulate the Renewable Fuels Association for doing an outstanding job supporting and promoting the ethanol industry's growth, and I know that your entire team has worked diligently to succeed. My question, Bob, is for you. Considering the positive impact that biofuels have had on the market so far, specifically lower gas prices at the pump, cleaner air, America's farmers' successes, and the nation's reduction on dependence on foreign oil, and I heard earlier you used the word danger. What do we need to do now, today, to not only continue the progress that we've enjoyed or the market has enjoyed, but to ensure that those investors who want to help grow the business are encouraged to remain?
Well, there are two things. One is, as Chris indicated, were asked about previously, let EPA know why this program is so important. Send in a comment. You know, you don't have to be a high-priced lawyer to file a comment with EPA. In fact, at the public hearing 2 weeks ago, probably the most effective person in 13 hours of testimony before EPA was a student from Michigan who drove all the way from his college campus, 20 years old, using his own money, to participate in this hearing. And what he said was, look, I'm just a college student. I don't work for the ethanol industry. I'm not a farmer. What I do care about is my environment. What I do care about is the price of gasoline. And I do not want my generation to have to suffer the consequences of your mistake. And the only consequence of reducing the RFS is more oil from fracking, more oil from tar sands, more oil from deep water drilling. And the environmental consequences of that is not something that I want. And he was extraordinarily effective. So, you know, that's why I say consumers, farmers, sure, but people that care about energy and environmental policy need to be letting the Environmental Protection Agency know during this comment period why they think this program is important. The second thing, Bobby, EPA has done this because of a concern about the lack of infrastructure, the lack of availability of higher ethanol blends and E85. If I'm a consumer, I'd want to, you know, go to my gas station and say, hey, why don't you offer E15? How about you put in a E85 pump? I want options. These options, by the way, will lower the price of gasoline. And I think if there's a groundswell of consumer support for alternatives, that'll be extraordinarily helpful as well.
I have a question. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate that. I have a question for Jeff. And Jeff, you mentioned the program's impact on the ethanol industry and 200-plus plants in operation and the billions of ethanol gallons of gas and ethanol. But given that OEMs are making smaller turbocharged engines that perform better, cleaner, with higher compression, that's exactly what the high-octane properties of ethanol provides. So we know that OEMs have to meet the CAFE mandate, and it's obvious that the cleanest, cheapest octane is ethanol. Is that not part of the plan and to create a presence with, as Bob, as you said, the consumers, a presence for higher-octane fuels, the 89 era, so that Ford's EcoBoost could really deliver, because they're detuning those engines from the factory to make them run on 87 at the pump.
Yeah, absolutely, Bobby. I think you hit the nail right on the head. As you said, I mean, the automakers are looking at the impending fuel economy regulations that they're going to have to comply with between 2017 and 2025 and wondering exactly how they're going to do that. And, they, of course, all the engineers in those companies have sat down at the drawing board and looked at multiple ways of increasing the fuel economy and reducing the tailpipe emissions of their vehicles to comply with those regulations. And one pathway toward compliance that is showing lots of promise is the use of a high-octane fuel in a downsized, turbocharged, like the EcoBoost from Ford. And as you pointed out, I mean, the cleanest and cheapest source of octane available on the market today is ethanol. So there's absolutely automakers in moving to octane fuel blend, and we feel pretty confident that ethanol could very well serve as that source of octane in that future fuel that would not only help the automakers meet their standards moving forward, but would provide cleaner air for consumers. So yeah, we think you hit the nail right on the head, and we think that EPA needs to be mindful of that program as well when they think about what to do with the RFS. They need to be looking at these regulations as part of a system that includes not only the fuels but the engines and the catalytic converters and everything else that that this nation is going to be using in the future.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, Bob, and thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Operator, do we have any more questions?
Your next question comes from the line of Elliot Blackburn with Argus Media.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I just wondered if you could explain again why the conventional ethanol component of RFS is so critical to an expansion of advanced biofuels. Why are those two necessarily connected?
Well, Elliot, in many cases, it is the existing ethanol producers that are doing the research and will be the first movers of cellulose technology. You've got companies like Quad County in Iowa that are working on a technology that will process the cellulose already coming into the plant into ethanol. You've got companies like Poet and Abengoa, leaders in the grain ethanol production business that are working today, building today commercial scale cellulosic facilities. So that's one aspect. The other is, it's the marketplace. If EPA has limited the market to the amount of ethanol that can be satisfied by 10%, the number that's convenient for the oil companies, there's not going to be any place for that next generation ethanol to go. The market's already saturated. So, I think it's very important that we be able to show a growing marketplace so that these second-generation facilities can indeed be financed, will have a place to bring their product, and the damage isn't done to the commercialization of these new fuels.
I mean, wouldn't there be a place for that fuel to go? It would just transition from conventional to advanced?
At what price? I think if you're going to finance a commercial size cellulosic facility, you're going to want to have the assurance that you're not going to have to be displacing product. You're not going to build a biofuels industry by cannibalizing biofuels. You build a biofuels industry by creating a market that will allow for the displacement of petroleum.
I wanted a quick follow-up, kind of unrelated to that, but you'd mentioned earlier that the importance of getting consumers to kind of give a groundswell for demanding options at retailers that haven't yet offered E85 or other flex fuel blends. What is RFA doing to that end, and what can you guys do, really, to kind of reach out to retailers, beyond EPA, reaching out to retailers and trying to encourage them to adopt this beyond the mandate?
Well, for the past several years, the RFA, along with the American Coalition for Ethanol, have organized a Blend Your Own program. And essentially, that is an education program. We have gone out to marketers all across the country, alerting them of the opportunity that exists for E15 and E85, pitching the value proposition to them. Certainly, today's economics would suggest that blending more of a product that is so much less expensive than gasoline is going to be beneficial both to the marketer and to the consumer. One of the issues that we've seen, though, is that as the major oil companies have divested from their downstream blending operations, it is the small businessmen that might have one or two gas stations that now have the lion's share of the fuel distribution infrastructure in this country, and they may not have the resources to put in a new pump. And so The industry is working today to try to create incentives to allow that infrastructure to occur. It would be helpful if the oil companies would, you know, get out of the way and not use their supply agreements to block gasoline marketers from offering these fuels, which is something we've seen happening all across the country as well.
And I'm sorry to interrupt again. I just, you know, given what you're seeing in D.C. and what EPA's put out in this proposal, does that program take on any more importance? Is there any thought from RFA of going back and either making that program more aggressive or changing it somehow?
You know, I should invite you into my next board meeting, and you'll be able to listen to the conversation. But, you know, sure. Of course it's more important. But whether EPA makes the changes that we believe that they must make to the RFS or not, the need for expanding the infrastructure for this industry is going to be there. The industry knows that. Certainly our trade association knows that, which is why we're pursuing this so aggressively. Operator, do we have any more?
There are no further questions at this time.
Operator, thank you, and I guess I'd thank everybody who's on this call. As always, if there are follow-up questions or you need any additional information, the Renewable Fuels Association is here to be a resource for you. Thank you very much for your time.